Hey guys, Sean here. Today's Mythos bonus episode brings you an interview we were able to do at Gen Con 2017 with Arkham creator and developer Matt Newman. Labyrinth of Lunacy was amazeballs and we wanted to get the scoop on it. So obviously, we didn't want to have Matt hold back any information for the sake of spoilers, so this is a serious spoiler warning. We run Ruin on everything in this interview, so if you have not experienced Labyrinth of Lunacy, which I would recommend you do in Epic Multiplayer, if possible, I will advise you to hit the old pause button on this one. Your media player will hold it in a sort of auditory stasis, giving you time to obtain and experience Labyrinth of Lunacy before you are assailed with the spoilerific interview you're about to hear. Still there? Okay, well, for the rest of us, I'm going to have to beg your pardon. I really thought I had dialed in my little pocket recorder prior to going live. This thing's new to me. But the audio file that we ended up getting from it was rough. The mic ran hot, and it didn't like the acoustics. So we did what we could in post, but this is still a little bit... it's a little bit on the side of rough, guys. I'm sorry. If it was anything other than this juicy interview, I'd have thought about scrapping it, but I figured it's better to exist in this compromised form than it is not to exist at all. So again, I'm sorry for the quality, but please enjoy this special Mythos bonus interview with Matt Newman.
Mythos Busters, investigating the mystery, monsters, and madness of Arkham Horror, the card game.
Alright, so we're at Gen Con. We have just finished Labyrinth of Lunacy. And I feel like it's appropriate that first, Matt, I thank you for blessing us with this experience. Thank you.
That was a true gaming experience.
Thank you for coming out here all the way to Gen Con.
Yeah, I don't know. Oh, hey, can we grab Nate?
Yeah, Nate.
Hey, Nate.
Do you want to be interviewed? It's recording right now.
I would like to be interviewed, but I am trying to marshal the Game of Thrones.
I heard you were a multitasker.
Yeah. Enjoy the interview, though.
Hi, everyone.
Thanks, Nate. So, talking about, I guess, Epic Multiplayer mode first, because that's kind of, I think, probably the first notable bullet point of this whole thing. I mean, was it kind of a foregone conclusion that it worked so well with Lord of the Rings in the past that we were going to try to implement it in Arkham? Or
there was a bit of a decision involved in that. Like, do we want to repeat, you know, what's been done with Lord of the Rings, or do we want to try something different? For this particular event, I was really inspired to do, like, the plot that's in Labyrinth of Lunacy, and that plot really needs Epic Multiplayer mode.
Sure.
So I was like, all right, let's take what Lord of the Rings has done with Epic Multiplayer mode, but turn it on, like, an Arkham spin. And that was, like, where the communication barrier came from and things like that. But it's Epic Multiplayer mode. If you've played Lord of the Rings, if you played Siege of Annunnos and those scenarios, you'll recognize some of the rules. But it's a very different feeling from how those events are. Yeah. Those are, like, you have all these people standing together, you know, using their teamwork and communication to figure out what to do. And this is kind of a little bit of the opposite.
So it sounded like the idea of parallel universes preceded the actual implementation. So you just kind of had this idea in your head that you wanted.
Yeah, I was really inspired by some of my favorite video games are like the Zero Escape series. If any listeners have ever played those games, they'll catch a lot of references there. And then of course like classic horror movies like Saw. This scenario is like my love letter to those games and those movies. And like Escape the Room puzzles,
right?
In general.
Yeah. I do want to say that while we were playing, I did call it Sock'em Horror, so I think that should be the unofficial subtitle to Labyrinth of Lunacy.
Yeah,
that's pretty fair. Okay, so kind of. I mean, I know you're really into throwing little references here and there to other things. So where did kind of the idea of Exidalon come from, the mastermind specifically?
So my answer will depend on how much of this you want me to spoil for listeners.
Full spoilers. We're going to give a full alert on this one.
Awesome. Okay, good. So Exidalon, my sort of like headcanon backstory for Exidalon is he's this guy who has he's learned to communicate with the other versions of himself.
Ah.
So he's working together with himself to become stronger so that he can survive in basically the Arkham universe. And in order to do so, he's created this ritual that he needs the investigators, he needs his victims to feel the maximum amount of anguish and despair and pain that they possibly can. And the best way to do that is to give them a glimmer of hope. Let them escape if they can. And that's why the entirety of the, it's a test, it's a trial of your skill. And if you can make it out, he'll let you go. But if you can't, he's going to feed off of your power and become stronger.
All right.
he's a totally made-up character, and he's kind of like my you know, brainchild.
Okay. So talking about the art really quickly here, and I'm not sure how much of this was you versus the artist, but is it a mask he's wearing?
Yeah, he's wearing like a gas mask.
Okay.
You can see it's kind of cracked,
yeah,
too.
Right, okay.
Yeah. Like, you can see there's like scars all over his body. Like, he's been self-flagellating, but it's not enough pain, you know? Mm. He needs to inflict pain on others.
So goddamn
metal.
There's a lot
of, like,
so
cool.
Metal.
His art description was one of the lengthiest art descriptions I've ever written, probably. But the artist really knocked it out of the park.
So, the logistics of three parallel obstacle courses, essentially.
Yeah.
Working in tandem with the acts and agendas, to me, is mind-boggling. How long did it take you to work out the mechanics?
This was definitely the longest development time that we've ever done on any scenario.
That's surprising.
Yeah.
I think we started playtesting this scenario, to put it into perspective, we're starting the development time for next year's Gen Con event. Now.
Wow. Yeah.
Like, that's how far ahead we work. We work really far ahead of schedule. So we started development on this in like the fall of last year. And we pretty much did development work on this all throughout playtesting for the entirety of like the Carcosa cycle.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, it was a very long development cycle, and there were a lot of iterations on like certain things, like how they would work, how the groups would interact with one another. The biggest hurdle was how to make this still compatible with 1-4 players.
Right.
Because
yeah.
we needed that compatibility. We weren't going to put a scenario out that's like, here's your one copy, by the way.
Yeah, I hope you have
11 friends.
And I hope you have a lot of friends, right? So that was the hardest part. And we ended up, I think, with a really good mode, because there's like basically a completely separate encounter set that you guys didn't even see that's in there. That's just for if you're playing with a single group. And then from there, we went on to make it into a mini campaign where you can actually play it with a single group, 1-4 players, 3 times in a row, once as each group, and that will determine the outcome. Kind of like as if you're simulating, you know, having 12 players. But yeah, it was tough. There was a lot of things that like went wrong in the first few playtests. Where I think the first playtest we made it to, I want to say the end of Act 1, and everything broke. We're like, oh, well, thanks for coming out here, guys. We're gonna have to completely redo this. But I'm really happy that it works.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It works.
Oh, yeah.
Can confirm. I just had a thought, and then it went. Guys, say something.
So, it's a pretty large scenario, and there's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of bits, a lot of stuff that we haven't seen before in other scenarios.
Mm-hmm.
Considering all of Labyrinths of Lunacy, what would you say are you singularly the most proud of?
Oh, jeez. Singularly the most proud of, I probably, did any of you get the Vent story card?
No.
No.
Okay, wow. Okay, so like, just the concept of, I really like the paradox objectives. The objectives that where it's like, do this thing before the agenda advances or you all die. And the thing that you're told to do is physically impossible.
Yeah.
And you have no idea how to do it. And you know, we have like people calling me over like, am I reading this right? am I really supposed to do this? And I'm like, yeah. And then you have to kind of like wait for the other groups to help you out. And you have to hope that they can help you out. You have to like find a way to communicate to them what your problem is, like what you need from them. So I think just in general, that whole concept and the levers in particular, I think, are the thing that I'm most proud of. The levers and the way that it interacts with the Chamber of Secrets.
Yeah.
I had so many people. There was on Thursday, there was a player who they guessed which lever to pull. You guys haven't.
I was just going to say,
do the levers.
How do you guys feel having no idea what he's talking
about? You have no idea what I'm talking about.
I'm excited to listen to this podcast later, Nick.
You guys were Group B, right?
Yeah. We were Group B, yeah.
Yeah, so there's one of the groups has three levers, and only one investigator can make the choice. And if they pull the wrong lever, they die.
That's awesome.
And if they pull the right lever, they make it. They make it through. The correct lever is something that they can't possibly know.
Right.
Yeah. So there was someone on Thursday who guessed correctly, and their cry of jubilation was something to behold. They were so happy. They were like, "Yes, I did it!" And it was really great.
Yeah, we popped the last damage on Exidalon. That was pretty epic as well.
Yeah, it definitely brings up a lot of like those big, intense, emotional moments. Almost like one of the things that stood out to me was the time. Like, it kind of reminds me of some like dungeon masters or game masters and RPGs will do like time challenges, right? Like you have the hourglass and you only have that much time. In our group, we basically got to a point where I had to save Nick.
Surprise!
He was just running into that room.
We needed one more round, and we had like 5 minutes left. I think you guys announced at that point.
So
this group next to us was kind of like, you know, they had a lot to deal with, so we're like sitting there praying, like, hurry, hurry, hurry.
I like how the timer interacts with the paradox effect card, because you're encouraged to really like talk for a while. You're like, you can just sit there and talk for like 15 minutes, but if you do, you're kind of putting like the other 10 people at risk.
The first
time
see
those people go,
The first time I did it, I didn't fully understand the implication, so I just went over to Casey and I was like, "So, what's going on over here?
How's it going?"
And I said, "Oh, you're playing Wendy. Okay, well, oh no, you don't. Wow, you've got a lot of resources. So are you trapped or anything?" Or just like. Yeah, okay, good talk.
Generally, once you hear that 30-minute warning, that's when you're like, oh no, we're all like, we need to get going.
There's only one Doom on the
exactly.
Yeah. So it worked out pretty well. There's very few groups that actually like ran out of time and got killed because of it. So I think the time was like just right amount of time. Just enough to like put the pressure on and make them feel like, we're running out of time. Yeah.
Event organizers take note.
Yeah. Was the time thing like from the first iteration, or is that something you added later on?
I always planned on it being thematically timed, like in the flavor text, Ixodalon is telling you that you only have a limited amount of time. And at first, that limited amount of time was just represented by the Doom on the agenda, like in any other scenario. But then it kind of like occurred to me that, you know, people were taking pretty much about an hour for each act. And on the flavor text I had written, you have 1 hour to do this or you will die. So I decided to try it one time, and it worked really well. So we just decided to run with it.
And that's just an event thing, right? Like where each one, like when you play it at home,
if you play it at home, you
go to the Doom.
Yeah. Well, you can choose to time yourself.
Sure.
And actually, the rules say like your event organizer may impose a time restriction. And you can set the time restriction to be whatever you want. If you play this at home, you could set it to be 45 minutes.
I was gonna say, so standard would be 60 minutes, hard would be 30 minutes, and
Well, that nightmare would be 30 minutes. Depends on the number of players.
Right.
A two-player game. If you have six people, three groups of two, then probably 30 minutes is all you need.
Sure.
Yeah.
So switching gears slightly,
mm-hmm.
The alt art promo.
Yeah.
So many cards, so little time. How do you decide which one you're going to bless with the alt art treatment?
Actually, believe it or not, this was a pretty easy choice. I think Leo DeLuca is
a
really popular
card.
He's
kind of a consummate ally.
Yeah, he's probably one of the more popular cards right out of the core set. We knew we wanted it to be a core set card.
Right.
Because that's the cards that most people are going to have and recognize.
Yep.
And it's also like, I mean, he has one line of text. Right?
Yeah.
So it's a really natural alt art card because we can expand that art window to be really tall. And he's a memorable character. And all I can say is it's not the last time he's going to appear somewhere. So perhaps not in card form, Perhaps not in card form.
What does that mean?
It could be a campaign log. It could be. I'm not even gonna.
Are you cosplaying as Leo? And, is that what's happening?
I probably could. That'd be pretty awesome. I should do that. So anyone who's going to Arkham Knights, if there's any listeners that are planning on going to Arkham Knights, if you cosplay, that would be wicked cool. You should do it. It'll be awesome.
I'll show up as the manatee version of it.
Yeah, that was my next question. So I noticed a large body of water in the background of the alternate art promo. I'm going to take credit for that here for us.
No.
If you squint really hard with a magnifying glass, there's a manatee
in the back.
No, that's just the docks of the Miskatonic River.
Oh, yeah, Sean.
They're all freshwater manatees, Nick.
Oh, I know.
There's only one body of water in Arkham, actually, didn't you know?
Aren't all manatees freshwater?
Yes, there's no salt water.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. No, those are dugongs.
Those are dugongs.
Yeah, that must be it. The Mississippi dugong.
The Mississippi dugong.
The Delaware dugong.
Actually, the hardest part with the Leo promo was, do we give them the level 0 or do we give them the level 1? Because we ended up giving one copy of each.
Yeah, which is smart, I think.
Which, yeah, I think that was the way to do it, but also it means that, you know, if you want two copies of the level 0.
Right. Yeah, but how many alt art cards give you a full playset anyway?
Right, sure. Yeah. And how many copies of Leo DeLuca are most people putting in their deck? I mean, I'm sure probably two, but there's probably a lot of people who are only putting one copy in anyway. Yeah. So
I'm pretty sure I'm just going to put both alt art copies in and just have a mental note, right, like, yeah, I've upgraded this, I haven't upgraded this.
Right.
So be sure to watch when he plays, yeah, make sure he's paying the right amount of resources.
Right. Or you could put the alt art copy in the normal copy, and then if you draw the normal copy, you just go
switch
and switch it out with the alt art. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember we used to do that with the proxies, where you'd have the rare card in the big, thick case to protect it, and you'd write in marker on a crappy card and have it in.
You didn't do that. This is a Black Lotus.
Yeah. This was way before I knew sleeves existed.
Right.
So, okay, so switching back to Labyrinths. Well, I mean, what has the feedback been? I can't imagine it's anything but...
It's been really positive. Like, everyone's coming up to me after the event and shaking my hand and getting me to sign stuff, which is really humbling, and telling me how much fun they had.
Until they decide to forge your signature and steal your identity in a long gone plan.
Well, my signature is not. I mean, it's just scribbles. So they could go ahead and forge it, but no one would believe them. But I was actually a little worried going into it, because there's a lot of effects that, like, for example, you know, if another group doesn't help you to solve your puzzle, you might all be dead. Yeah. And so I was a little worried that there might be some frustration with that, but no, really none. Everyone who did die, everyone who didn't make it out of the labyrinth was really gracious and really like, wow, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
Can't wait to try it again and see if I can survive next time. So
that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's a great sign.
Well, in my first playthrough of it, my group totally wiped. Like, flip the card, read what happens, oh, we all die.
Oops.
And normally, like, that's such a thing where it's like, really? You just flip a card and everyone dies? But the steps are all laid out to prevent
it.
We just chose not to do that because we were holding out for something else. That didn't work out. So, really well done.
And I think that was one of the central, like, things that really sold, like, the kind of Saw Madman Labyrinth thing, was the fact that in each case, like, each puzzle you're faced with, the pieces aren't there at first. You don't see, like, how you're going to get it.
Yeah.
Like, because if it's like, oh, the antidote is on this card and it's there, it doesn't have that same flavor of, like, oh, I know exactly what to do. That unknown of, like...
It becomes so mechanical instead of a puzzle game.
The fact that the syringe doesn't say antidote anywhere on the card.
And it's filled with, like, slime.
Yeah.
If you look at it, you're like,
we had that moment where we're like, obviously we need to find the antidote. Oh, hey, there's a syringe. It has the antidote. And, like, right before we stuck it in Nick's neck, we're like, wait, what?
What if this is not an antidote?
So,
one of the
other groups during this event injected someone else.
Oh,
thinking, like, this is probably harmful. And then one person was like, oh, you know what, I'll take it because I'm not doing super well anyway. But he's not the person who pulled the lever, so,
Oh, no. Rough.
Yep. Yeah. But again, he was like, that was so much fun.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
we did it wrong. But, yeah, so the difficulty in this scenario doesn't necessarily come from the cards, like the numbers on the cards and the effects on the cards. It comes from trying to naturally and organically figure out what you actually have to do to survive, and helping the other groups do so as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the kind of
alternate universe. I mean, freaking the Arkham universe. You could have placed this in any setting. You could, like, you wake up in Yoggoth, then you're in some weird prison, blah blah blah. Like, how did you decide the setting and kind of this? I mean, was it really the Saw influence, or
it was a little bit of that, and it was also I was really enthralled by the idea that when you make it out. You make it out, and you're like, I was in Arkham the whole time.
I was expecting to like walk out under the Miskatonic U campus or something. Just like
that, almost to me, that's more horrifying.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's kind of like, you know, like this could happen, right? Like in the resolution text, it's like there are dock workers there, like
ducks,
like you were screaming, beating on the door, and they didn't hear you, and like that to me is way more terrifying than showing up and like on the moon, you know?
Yeah,
sure. Definitely.
So this is actually a general question, but I'll ask it in the context of this. Like, how do you decide among the pantheon of the bestiary of enemies and monsters? How do you kind of decide what goes where? Like, I think Night Gaunts and Mego were featured in this one, but kind of how do you decide where to pull from the roster?
So some of that was figuring out which art pieces that we want to order and which pieces we already have from previous Arkham titles and such. So for example, in this scenario, we had to order so much art for like the locations and such that we used the Mego and the Night Gaunts were both originally called Cthulhu LCG.
Sure.
So that was really helpful for us because it saved us room so that we could order, like, for example, all those diagrams and all those other things. Those are all, you know, permission. So that's part of it. And then also Night Gaunts are known for swooping in and just picking people up. So having a Night Gaunt, that it's not explained, like, why are there Night Gaunts here,
right.
But their title is Abductor.
Yeah.
It kind of tells the story of, like, this is how you got here.
Yeah.
Potentially.
It actually took me a second to figure out it was a Night Gaunt. Because I'm like, oh, hey, cool. Because when you look at the art, it's kind of obscured.
Right.
I'm like, oh, it's like the Beast from Stranger Things.
Yeah.
And then Nick's like, oh, it has a Night Gaunt trait. I'm like, oh, yeah, it's a Night Gaunt, I guess.
Yeah. And also, like I said, Ixodalon, he's just this person who has learned these secrets and figured out how to do these things. So they had to also be monsters that one could, you know, interact with and potentially like recruit to be his minions effectively. So it couldn't have been like, you know, a force of nature, like a Shoggoth or something like that. It had to be something that you could, like, Mego are smart. Mego are intelligent. Night Gaunts, you can ride them, you know, that kind of thing.
So, sure.
Yeah.
Interesting. Some parallels between this scenario and Bloodborne. You're a Bloodborne fan?
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man.
Bloodborne's probably one of my favorite video games of all time. Like, top three video games
definitely.
Of all
you guys
time.
Should just go get a room.
But yeah, the whole, like, time with the Night Gaunts and how they abduct people, that just made me think of Bloodborne, the Snatchers, and the Faceless Village. And
Snatchers.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they were actually, they were a little bit of the inspiration behind the kidnapped art.
Yes, exact. That's what we were playing that, and I was literally showing that to people. Like, look, this is from Bloodborne. And the steps of Yalagol and lost in time and space. I'm like, Bloodborne!
And I'm like, God, Nick, shut up. It's the sixth time.
Yeah, if you have a PlayStation 4 and you haven't played Bloodborne, you're doing yourself a disservice.
Proof once again that Nick is right.
He had help.
I don't have a PlayStation, so I can't play it.
Yeah, so he's double wrong.
That's a good excuse, I guess. Yeah. Nick, let him borrow your PlayStation.
Yeah.
Let me just mail it to me.
Mail it to California.
So one thing that I thought was really cool about this is, and I think we respected Table Talk Rules way more because of it, is the fact that these are parallel universes. You have to have a special circumstance to communicate with the other investigators. Like, when we play, in normal scenarios, I never actually observe the Table Talk Rules because I'm like, I could investigate. Like, they know what card I'm talking about most of the time.
Right, yeah.
But in this one, oh man, it is such a thing. And that, it's the Paradox, what's the card that lets you?
Paradox Effect.
Paradox Effect.
Yeah.
That was so evocative. I have Stranger Things on the mind right now, but that was so evocative of those moments where, like, there's that, you know, thin in the universe, and, like, you can just, like, see through to the other person.
Yeah.
Now, the conversations ended up being a little bit more mundane than you would probably
think. How you guys doing? Do you need this?
Yeah.
Like, so you,
how you doing for cash?
Yeah, got any monsters over there? Is it...
Yeah, that was something that I wouldn't say it changed over time with the scenario, but it was something that we really had to kind of, like, hammer out. How are we going to do this? because there have definitely been times where in playtests, you know, we sat down and people just started like yelling the answers.
Right. Oh yeah.
Not like intentionally. They sure. just feel like they're loud speakers.
They get excited.
Yeah, yeah. And in my head, I'm like, I hope this is gonna work, but Gen Con's loud enough that it should be fine.
Right.
But I encourage any players at home who are playing this to like play in separate rooms. I think that really hammers
the
beat.
I never even thought about
that.
Yeah,
you play in
blinds
separate rooms
at least.
And you kind of just peek your head in to say like, we're at the end of the round.
Have a bell.
Yeah, yeah. And then it's
that's
it, instead of the loudness covering up all the speak, it's just like it's really quiet.
Yeah.
And that I think makes it even more scary. You feel like more alone, you know. So
interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think that kind of scenario too, with these elements like you're saying, it not only does enhance the table talk but also the role playing elements because
yes.
you kind of get into that mindset. Like there was a point where Roland was gonna trigger the poison chamber, and I was in the room,
and we hadn't secured the antidote yet.
As Jenny, I was like, I'm gonna move out of the room before you do that. And Nick's like, mechanically, it probably won't matter. I'm like, no, Jenny would move out of the room and back away. So I appreciated that aspect. It definitely gets you in the mindset of it.
Yeah, that was that whole thing with the poison chamber was a good moment. Me building off of what I learned from my first playthrough and you guys with the blind playthrough and me trying not to spoil anything
yeah.
and how it worked out and then the syringe and quick, get it in rolling real quick. And
it also helped me to totally trust you.
Yeah, well, there's that. That's just natural.
I think there are so many cool stories that can come out of this scenario.
Yeah.
Like, I can recount, there was another group, same chamber, right, chamber of poison. Where they knew they weren't going to get the syringe in time. They had figured out that that's what they needed, but they knew they weren't going to get it in time, so one of them ran in and pulled it without conferring.
Right.
They just like...
Just go.
Right. It was almost like a Walking Dead moment.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And they were like, what are you doing? And he's like, go on without me. And it was so great. Yeah.
Yes.
It was perfect.
So I think one of the parts I found most interesting is the puzzles in the wording of the action agenda and how that relates to the note.
Yeah, yeah.
How did that come about, and how did you decide exactly where it fell on the continuum of difficulty?
Yeah, yeah. That's a good question. So, like, one of my major inspirations for this scenario, as you probably already figured out, was, like, escape the room kind of puzzles. And we actually went to a bunch of escape the rooms before designing the scenario as like inspiration. And one
work
of the things
credit.
That
it's research, so the word, you know, I paid for it, right?
No, but I didn't tell them. I just kind of went and did it. Yeah. But so like when I got back, I was like, all right, so I want to emulate this feeling of like trying to figure out what you need to do.
Mm.
But I want it to be the player, not the car,
yeah.
you know, not the investigator. Cause
not mechanic.
Right. Like, mechanically speaking, it would just be gather these clues. You
right.
figured it out.
Yeah.
Right.
Make an intellect
that's how any other scenario is. So I wanted it to be more like, no, the player has to figure out what to do. So that was, I think, a natural fit, giving them actual puzzles to solve, word scrambles.
Sure.
There's probably some that you didn't even see because you've only played twice. And
like the levers.
Like
I've only played once.
Levers and there's other like word ones too.
Sure.
But the one that the note. Is probably the one that everyone will see.
Yeah, because instantly you're just like, what?
Yeah.
You're just like,
really? Were you the one who said the first time you saw it, you thought it was an error?
No, I saw it, and because I had it in my first game. I had it in my first game the whole time, so I was like, it's going to be important, it's going to be important. And then never came up because we wiped. And so then afterwards I went up to Matt, and I was
right.
This is a red herring, right? I'm like, and he's like, the note? I'm like, yeah, it's a red herring. No. I'm like, what?
Nope.
You didn't get to herring. Act 3. I was like, God damn it.
Yeah,
that was so cool. I was so invested in that.
And we did definitely get questions like, is this wrong? Like when we sent it to production, that was especially fun.
Oh yeah,
this is wrong, right? And I'm like, nope, this is perfectly accurate. So
like you saw the agenda at the end of the core scenario, right? Like we just do that stuff
yeah.
in this game.
Right, yeah, yeah, exactly. So just like having puzzles in there that you have to solve. And then the tricky part with that is we had to consider, like, is this worth it? Because when they play it again, they're going to know what it says.
Right.
But in practice, that's still fine. It was still a lot of fun.
Well, and there's enough variance, too, like between the story cards that are introduced and the different acts, and you can shuffle those up like that other version of the game.
There's a lot of replayability. You have the three groups that are all pretty different from one another, and then you have the story cards, which are all pretty different from one another, and then there's an optional variant. It's called the Shifting Labyrinth that randomizes the group cards. So you could start off with like the group A, Act 1,
and then go to the group C,
Act 2. And it works. It works really well. The only reason that why that's not the default mode is because we kind of want you to get the group experience first.
Right.
Yeah, where it's like, you're a group A. And that makes it easier to replay the scenario later, right? You just know, all right, I'm going to play group B this time.
God, I'd almost think it'd be cool, like, if you're going to organize something like this, to randomize who's in, who's sitting at a table together, too.
Yeah. Oh, actually, sure. we had discussed that, too. It would have made a lot of thematic sense. You wake up with strangers. Yeah, like, who are these people? I don't know. We have to work together. Yeah. Where's, you know, where are my friends? I don't know. They're at completely different tables. I hope they make it out. We talked about doing that, but in the long run, we didn't want to upset anyone who came all the way to Gen Con with their friends.
Yeah. Sure.
They organized their decks together, or maybe they came with their significant other, and they knew they wanted to play together.
Yeah, right.
But I encourage players at home, if they organize this event on their own, definitely, like, break all the groups up, mix everyone around, it'll be a lot of fun.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Guys, anything else?
This will be available for purchase separately at some point in the future, right?
This will be available for retail at some point. I don't know when.
Yeah.
I wish I could tell you when, but I literally don't know.
You can just say a date.
What are they going to do?
It's not going to be as quick as Curse of the Reaper, I'll tell you that much.
Well, yeah, I wonder why.
There's a lot going on in this scenario.
The packaging itself.
Yeah,
Has there ever been anything in that package before? It was completely new to me.
That was a big challenge for us for the retail version. Just be on the lookout. It's going to be special.
Great.
It's going to be special.
So I know you can't confirm, I know you can't deny, I know you can't make any promises, but I'm just going to throw this thought out into the world.
With Diana Stanley, I'm off here.
I'm walking away.
Who?
Yeah. Right answer.
Who said that? I don't hear people who are dead to me. I'm thinking that it would be the coolest thing in the world for the social deception aspect of something to come into this game, and for like it wouldn't have to be an epic multiplayer mode, but just to have that, almost like The Thing.
That, like, would be like a con. That'd be perfect con.
It would, especially if you're sitting with people you don't know.
Yeah.
So, you know, just throwing that out there. If that happens, I'm going to be a really happy camper sometime in the nebulous future.
I will take that into consideration.
Fantastic.
As if he hadn't already.
We have talked about it.
I'm sure.
We've talked about a lot of different ideas. Before we settled on Labyrinths, we talked about, you know, what kind of special events can we do for Gen Con. Because we know we want these events to be an experience. So you would go to Gen Con to do, you know, that you want to sit down and do. So like Curse of the Ruger and Carnival are great. But we wanted to do a scenario that's more than just a standalone. It's something that you know, you get this experience that you would have to really kind of like organize to do it at home. But when you go to Gen Con, we kind of do all the organizing for you.
Yeah, it's gotten really slick the past few years. Like, you guys even have like table copies out.
Well, it took a while to set up.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
I think tomorrow I'm going to have to show up a little bit earlier. it was pretty slick, actually. I think it went really smoothly.
Awesome. So, Diana Stanley confirmed. That's what I heard.
That's not what I said.
All right, Matt. Well, thanks for sitting down with us. This was a fantastic experience.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you guys so much for coming all the way out here to Gen Con.
Yeah, our pleasure.
I think so, yeah.
This is like the highlight of Gen Con far, playing that scenario. Oh,
thank you.
Yep. All right, well, we'll toss it back to the regular show, I guess, unless this is the end of the episode, in which case we'll see you next time.